Hello and welcome to Localization Today. Today we have an amazing panel titled Haitian Heritage Month, Honoring Haitian Language, Culture and Identity with three amazing panelists. So in celebration of Haitian Heritage Month, Multilingual Magazine is bringing together leading voices from the Haitian linguistics cultural community to reflect on the richness, resilience, and global impact of Haitian identity. This panel will explore the intersection of language, culture, and representation, from the role of Haitian Creole in education and community building to the challenges and opportunities in the language services industries. Join us then for a meaningful conversation today with Marlene Julien from Creole Solutions, Junior Messamores from JR Language Services, and Webster Cornell from Indiana University. I will be your host today, and today we'll share personal stories. Please help me welcome our guests. Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello, Eddie. Hello, everyone.
Hello, Eddie. Hello, everyone.
Hello, Eddie. Hello, Marlene. Hello, Webster. I'm Junior Messamores with JM Language.
Fantastic. And thank you, Junior, for taking the lead on that one. I will ask each of you to give us 30 seconds, if you might, introducing yourselves to give the audience some background and know what they can expect from this conversation as they are tuning in, whether they are joining us live or if they are listening to this conversation at a later date. So if we can do Marlene, Webster, and then Junior, just the way we did it, please tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Thank you, Eddie, and thank you so much for having us. And I want to say congratulations to you and your team for putting together such a wonderful panel, and we appreciate that. As you mentioned earlier, my name is Marlene Julien. I am the founder of Creole Solutions, a translation and interpreting company specializing in one language, Haitian Creole. We have three main objectives, you know, providing language access to the Haitian population by facilitating communication with organizations, with their employees, students, and patients. Our second objective is job placement. We offer training to Haitian professionals and translation technology and things like plain language and translation techniques so that they can succeed as language professionals. And a very important part of our mission is to elevate the Haitian Creole language and culture. And we've done some work in Haiti and in social media to promote the Haitian Creole language and educate people on its importance. And I'll hand it over to Webster.
How can I introduce myself? There's such a lovely presentation. So hi, Eddie. Thank you, everyone, for having us. And happy Heritage Month to our Haitian fellows and also like friends of Haiti around the world. We're so happy to be here today in the localization and today. And for me, I am an adjunct lecturer of Haitian Creole Language and Haitian Studies at Indiana University, where I teach Haitian Creole languages and also Haitian culture and society classes. That means I'm every day inside the Haitian, between the intersection of language and culture. And also I created like the Haitian Creole program in 2023, and Junior is part of it. He's a very good part of it. It's just the idea I was, because I also work as a reading interventionist in Indianapolis at an elementary school with Haitian kids. There's a lot of Haitian kids, but there's a diverse background students. And I realized that we had a need to better understand the Haitian needs, the family needs, or the kids' needs sometimes. And we created, and also we offered some cultural trainings to educators also. Professionals in Indiana. That's a little bit about my way.
Well, yes. At JM Language, we provide interpretation and translation services nationally and internationally. So our teams travel a lot all over the U.S. and also abroad to offer services and different languages, including Haitian Creole, French, English, Spanish, and others with different partners. So we help a lot in the community, especially that our motto is accuracy, and compassion. We don't see language just as words, but also we see the people behind the language needing the service. So we try to address issues. We will develop a little more that when we are in the field, we do more than just translate and interpret. We try to make the community better by making many recommendations to providers as per how to service better the Haitian community.
Thank you, Junior. Thank you, Webster and Marlene. And of course, everyone who is listening to the conversation, like I said, whether you are live or if you are listening to this on our podcast, please let us know how you are hearing us, wherever you are in the world, and also whether you're on YouTube or LinkedIn. Tell us where you are tuning in from. Tell us which city, which country you're tuning in from. We'd love to hear, to see where you are located. Ideally, of course, as well, in this conversation, we will make sure that you get as much insight as possible from our amazing guests. Please, everyone, remember, if you are not talking, mute your microphone so that we don't get the echo, which could affect the quality. But without any further ado, of course, we have questions prepared for this conversation. And, you know, if we stay the first on the first question, it's one of those that everyone probably can answer. It is related to the reason why there is a Heritage Month, right? Haitian Creole has often been marginalized despite being the language spoken by the majority of Haitians. And that probably poses significant pressures on academic, business, the professional world, and even in the world contexts. So I'd love to hear your perspective on why this Heritage Month is important. You know, how do you think things have been shaped because of this marginalization, and what do you think we can do about that?
I think want to start.
I think he does.
You know, it's about localization.
Go ahead, Webster. Go ahead.
The meaning of this Haitian Heritage Month could be localized a little bit, because sometimes in the US or UK or outside of Haiti, you can see the meaning of like such an initiative, which is not the same way and receive in Haiti, because sometimes, you know, what is the topic of discussion or debate in such corners, maybe not of great interest in another one. And what I wanted to say, like, for this, for me, it's very important here. And I heard that the history and started with in Boston. We gotta pay homage to our friend in Boston and also like Florida, and now and all over the US.
Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago. I know your Chicago. We're not gonna let it behind. So, yeah, I know this. This initiative helped us realize that the importance or like the richness of the Haitian culture, the Haitian language, or like the Haitian music, and also like makes us understand and why we're still talking about marginalization of Haitian language, for example. And we know, like, if we can go back to the and kind of a historical tone, and we know, like, in post-colonial societies, usually we have two or three languages at play, and colonizers' language and also the Creole language, and usually, like, inside the society, the Creole language is considered as like the poor relation of this interplay. And which is not different in Haiti. And I think like this such a month helped us realize that we need to acknowledge what has been done, to pay homage to people like who devoted themselves to and create and meaningful interaction or conversation about the culture or the society overall. But also to take a step back to say, okay, there is a long road to go, and also like another step to make about what we can do or what we should do for a broader recognition in so global context of the Haitian Heritage Month and overall like Haitian culture, society, and identity.
Yeah, what I would add is that even though colonization is over from a historical standpoint, the way Haitian Creole is treated both internationally and in Haiti is rooted in history, because it is not only the language that is marginalized, it is almost everything, the foundation of our identity, and also everything that links us to the motherland, Africa. It's the language, it's the religion, it's the food, it's the way we see ourselves, our skin color, the texture of our hair. Everything is marginalized. As long as it doesn't belong to the colonist, to the colonizer, it's marginalized. Now, what are the effects of that on the society? Like in the US, when our teams go out in the field to serve the Haitian community, what do we see? We see lack of access to information, because it is not available in a language that they understand. And sometimes, even if it is available, but the quality of the translation is not the best. I remember when I was first coming to the US, I would rather read, when I would be on the bus in Miami going home, I'd rather read the Spanish or the English version instead of the Creole version, because the language is butchered literally. And it's the same. Sometimes my kids, when we get a letter from the school here, and because they know we're Haitians, they send a Creole version, but it is not proper Haitian Creole. So we have to tell them this is not good Creole. So it's also lack of access to resources, lack of access to information, lack of access to services, and also unjust arrest by the police, unjustified loss of custody by Haitian parents to foster care. So there are so many different incidents on families, on a community, because of lack of access to Haitian Creole. Those are just a few of them.
All right. I think, you know, I'm speechless now that everyone basically laid out everything that we're dealing with. But to piggyback on what Webster say, Haitian Heritage Month is mainly celebrated in the United States. Last year, the mayor of Chicago recognized May as Haitian Heritage Month, and it's been happening throughout the U.S. It's in Boston, Florida, and it's a way to recognize the contributions of Haitians in the United States. And as many of know, I'm from Chicago, and I always proudly say how DeSabo, of Haitian origin, is the founder of Chicago. But a lot of Haitians have contributed in science, medicine, and history. Haitians fought in the war in the Savannah. So we have always contributed to the U.S. history. And this is why it's so important to celebrate Haitian Heritage Month. And I'm happy that companies like Multilingual Media are seeing the importance of doing that, because Haitians are very important to the economy and culture of the United States. To answer the second question about why Haitian Creole has been marginalized, we know that 95%, whilst the statistics say 95%, but I know that all Haitians speak Haitian Creole. I haven't met a Haitian who doesn't speak Haitian Creole, but Haitian Creole is this sideline, like Junior said, in courts and hospital for emergency services. So that's why it's very important for us to understand the importance of Haitian Creole and why we need to give more access to Haitians. And Haitians also need to contribute to this. It's not just, you know, asking for the government to promote language access, but there's a lot of things we can do. At Creole Solutions, we have a literacy program where we teach people in Haiti. We have partners with a company called Association Haïti Chéri with 101 schools as beneficiaries. We have a literacy program where we educate the community about the importance of their language, because a lot of them didn't go to school to learn it. And we introduce concepts like linguistic justice, language access, because some of them may not know that they have these rights. It's their constitutional right. So we need to educate them about that. We teach them about the four foundations of the Haitian Creole writing system. And then we also give them a call to action, inviting them to defend the language and to also use the correct writing system and educate others. So I think that's one way. There's the policy that we may not have control over, but there's a lot that we can do as people for our communities.
And that's particularly true, right? As you start thinking about what language enables, and especially in this day and age, right? When we're talking about technology and how artificial intelligence is going to make things so much easier, you have companies like Duolingo that their CEO is saying that their artificial intelligence is a better teacher than the humans. Maybe in the following up, it does help me follow up with my streak and make sure I don't, you know, drop it. And when I drop it, make me feel bad. With that said, there are some elements of language that are intertwined with, we won't talk yet about that, but intertwined with business and the creation of content. I mean, when you create those contents is when you're able to engage so that transactions can happen. But we'll talk about that later. Right now, as we embark this conversation and then we look at language as an enabler, what role does language play in preserving and promoting Haitian heritage, especially among younger generations? We're talking about, you know, the diaspora especially. If you are thinking of Haitian Creole as a marginalized language, it becomes a second-class language. And then you have to go with the language that, you know, makes you sound like the ones in charge. And that is a very important conversation to have. So what role does language play in increasing that Haitian heritage? And also, then how do we balance us with our young communities? How do we balance the cultural preservation of the Haitian heritage with, you know, the adaptation to multicultural environments and also accepting and respecting other cultures?
If I may, language is the backbone of our culture. So for Haitians or second generation Haitians in the diaspora, that's their last link to Haiti, because a lot of them probably have never been to Haiti, but they speak the language, they eat Leo and they listen to Compa. But the language is very important. One thing I notice is that a lot of Haitian Americans, like my children, they understand Haitian Creole perfectly, but they're afraid to speak it because they may get laughed at, or, you know, they don't, because they speak a Creole that's spoken at home, not at a professional or academic setting. So I think it's very important for the parents listening here to make sure that your children not only speak the language, that they read it, they have access, you know, the books that we have available, they have access to it, because that's what's going to keep Haitian Creole alive. And right now, there's a lot of, you know, when if you go to the digital space, you see Haitian Creole on TikTok, on Facebook, on LinkedIn. So it's a living language and it continues to grow. So it's important to keep the children connected to the language, not only as an identity thing, but also because when a child is bilingual, they get paid. If you are a bilingual, a candidate for a job, you may be able to get 5 to 20% more if you're working in healthcare or in logistics. So it's also economic capital to have your child connected to their language and their culture.
Not only economic advantage, is also it makes children smarter when they speak more languages. And I can tell, as somebody who speaks 4 languages, going on to 5, every time you speak a language, it's like you're a character. It allows you to connect to more people in a deeper and a more genuine way. And Creole is essential. Like Marlene said, is the backbone of the culture, is a vessel of collective memory, oral tradition, the culture, and the Haitian experience at large. When I meet somebody who speaks Haitian Creole in the U.S., I meet an ally. I meet somebody I can have unique conversations with. And I start speaking to especially Black people out of the blue in Haitian Creole. And if they happen to be Haitians, we have a conversation. This is great. Creole is part of the DNA of who we are as a nation. And it's essential to continue practicing Haitian Creole with our kids. My kids came to the U.S. when they were 7, when they were 8. When they go to school, it's very challenging because kids want to look like their peers. They want to sound like their peers. They will embrace whatever their peers is doing. So it's a big challenge for parents in the U.S. But the worst part is parents not wanting their children to speak Haitian Creole. I met somebody from New York, a commissioner from New York a few weeks ago, and she told me that New York has lost a lot of funding for bilingual schools because Haitian parents complain. Listen to that. Haitian parents complain about the school system teaching their children their language. So I guess to elevate Haitian Creole, we need to go to the root of the problem, which is Haitians embracing their culture, accepting themselves for who they are. That's why at the beginning we said that the problem is rooted in history. So, because what colonization did, it makes you hate everything you are. Everything you are. African, practicing voodoo, connecting with your ancestors, eating your food, loving what you are, and your skin color. Everything. Colonization makes you question yourself and makes you want to look, to speak, and to be like somebody else. So the main thing, the base, the fundamental thing about this situation is Haitians embracing being Haitian, being African, and accepting themselves for who they are.
But how do you learn that? Like those, I'm sorry to interrupt. Like those parents, the story about the parents, I always sympathize. Yes, I always sympathize with the parents because they were probably growing up in school and they couldn't get services because they didn't speak French and they want the best for their children.
Exactly.
The context is different here in the United States. We know that, but they don't know that. So when they do that, it's not because, well, it's a type of self-hate, but it's because they want their children to have the best education. Mm-hmm. And they were taught that the education in Haitian Creole is subpar. It's not as good as French or other languages. So it's education. And this is why we need to sympathize with these people and teach them, you know, the how important. Tell them, like you said, when you speak 5 languages and you're like cognitive, and you know, it's good for their brains, mm-hmm. you know, it helps the memory. So mm-hmm. we teach them about the advantages of speaking multiple languages, and then we can take it from there. I'm sorry, Webster.
That's good.
No, you're, I don't know if there is something left to say. I just wanted to pitch in and to say that the thing is, it's that they don't know. Like, one of the reasons why I want my kids to don't lose their Haitian Creole, that gives them a job right off the bat. Once you turn 18, you become an interpreter. You come work for JM Language, you know, and you make money.
No, what I was saying.
I'm sorry, Gaju. And that's what my father, I came here at a very young age. And my father always made sure that I learned how to speak and how to spell and how to speak. And I was also in an environment, you know, I'm privileged where I was able to speak Haitian Creole. But if my parents didn't let me, you know, make me keep this part of my culture, I wouldn't be here today. So this is why it's so important for the parents to educate their children.
Absolutely agree with that. And I was before kind of grasping the question. I was thinking about 2 things because Marley mentioned in Bad Creole. Of course, there's a play created by Dominique Morisseau, and who is MacArthur Junius, and about this situation where there is a little confrontation between Haitian who think they speak better Creole than others. So there's a play, and I haven't seen it yet because it was in New York, but I've read a very great piece, a story in The New Yorker about it. And secondly, about bilingualism, because Junior mentioned it. I remember last year in December, maybe like the former government launched a program called Bilingualism is a Superpower, like, so kind of value, encourage people to continue or to keep practicing their language. Okay, my point is mostly about, like, I want to take one example because I work at an elementary school. There is a lot of Asian kids. And 2 months ago, I wrote a piece for Chalkbeat Indiana. It was about, is Haitian Creole, it's a social connected language for Haitians. Why I ended up with that, because there are some Haitian kids at school, and even there's a situation where they were talking in English with someone, when I showed up, they're always talking to me in Haitian Creole. And I'm talking about kids who are bilingual, like who speak, because those kids are mostly well born in South America. They speak in Haitian Creole, Spanish, and Portuguese, and you know, English as well. So they are really, really, really like a polyglot. And some of them, like, I remember I talked to one of them in fourth grader, and I asked her, why do you always talk to me in Haitian Creole? And she said, because I feel more connected to you in Haitian Creole. And I realized that that's the reason I ended up with the question, but the piece hasn't been published yet, but for some reason, but it's like for this kid, the language is kind of the place for social interrelation for them. That's the reason I think. And for this kid, like I said, born outside of Haiti and not little with Haiti, but about the language, their primary languages are like sometimes Spanish and Portuguese, not Haitian Creole. They are really heritage learners, or like heritage Creole language learner or speaker. So, and that's the first example. And also at Indiana University, I have so many Haitian kids taking the Haitian Creole class because they haven't gotten the chance yet at home to speak Haitian Creole with family. And before that, I remember I used to ask myself, how that happened, like a Haitian kid not speaking Haitian Creole inside a Haitian household. And I used to think about it, and I realized that a lot of them, like sometimes these kids, one of them told me, like, sometimes they are the vehicle to learn the English language for this family. That means like family learning the language or grasping the language by them. That means that they ended up not speaking Haitian Creole and the family ended with the English proficiency. And I wanted to start with these two cases because I think some of us I already mentioned, like if you go on TikTok or social media, you see there's a very willingness and inside this and diaspora and the youngest community to learn the Haitian Creole. And for them, a sign of identity or like to identify with the Haitian culture is sometimes to learn the language, at least to know sac passé, and also like to value the Haitian flag, which is May 18th. Like they really, really, and it's really a great deal for them. And sometimes about the Haitian cuisine. It's like promoting this part of themselves. And I think this is a very great sign because if we think, and maybe like I used to read stories about back in the day sometimes, and Haitian kids born in the diaspora were a little bit shame of speaking Haitian Creole for some contextual reason. For example, during the 90s, the 80s in the US, they were like, where we used to identify AIDS with one of them as Haitian. Like you can imagine like how it's difficult for a kid to say that I am Haitian while you identify as someone living with HIV. Like you see like sometimes this situation kind of push a little bit like the individual to be identified with his or her own identity or a cultural identity. But I think it's a very great sign for me. And also thinking about like the language also, we know it's like we used to say, it's a means of diplomacy too. And a lot of these kids sometimes ended up inside the US Senate or like representative, like so have this voices inside the political landscape. It's very important because at the end of the day, it's about politics. And this, when we have a Haitian representative or Haitian We're all representative with Haitian background and speaking Haitian Creole inside the Senate. That says something about the country or also about the culture. And some kids are willing to identify with this piece of the culture. One last example. I remember I was listening to so a woman like retelling the story when Wyclef Jean, which is a Haitian superstar, when he received the Grammy at the end of the 90s and with the Haitian flag. And it was like, and she said that, and tomorrow morning, it was like almost every Haitian kid willing to show proudly their flags, because we see like Wyclef, you know, at one of the biggest stages in the world, Grammy stage, and like proudly showing like the Haitian flag. You see this type of examples, even they are like examples, but also they mean so much for the culture, like for these kids willing to learn, but also willing to identify with the culture, like which not their culture, but also which is a second culture for them because it kind of heritage culture. Yes.
Thank you so much. How much do we miss? Oh, sorry. Here's some huge echo.
Maybe for me.
It could be. Yes, I think it was. But thank you. How much do we miss every time a language is lost to the world? And we've had conversations here in Multilingual about indigenous languages and you know, the historical representations, the cultural expressions that get lost, the insights, the wisdom that gets lost when languages get lost. And when you stop using languages, the interactions that are lost, the insights that are lost, because you start kind of like adapting to something else. So thank you so much for sharing those insights with us. For those that are listening, for those that are watching live, we are today celebrating Haitian Heritage Month and with an amazing conversation, a great panel with great guests. If you don't know them, Junior Mesa Moores, a community leader and the CEO of JM Language, and Marlene Julien, a community leader and CEO of Creole Solutions. Again, if you just joined us, thank you for being here. Share with us where you are listening from. We have Jean-Marc Julien from Chicago, of course. Camos from Newark in New Jersey. I've been there, actually. Listening from the Dominican Republic, John Wieslin. And Ivelta, I don't know where you are, Ivelta, but thank you so much for listening. And Jeff Luisan, thank you for liking this initiative. Everyone else, please let us know what you're putting there. For those that are listening, if you want to know where this conversation is going to be at, it's going to be in Localization Today, which is one of Multilingual Media's podcasts. So on this occasion, we are recording live Localization Today. You can scan the QR code and see these and previous conversations. You'll probably see the snippets as well on LinkedIn. Added to this, if you want to stay tuned on Localization Today, C-Suite Hot Seat, Lang Talent, Echoes of Meaning, and our magazine, join our newsletter, which is the weekly digest, comes out every Wednesday. And you'll see this recording on the weekly digest. You can also scan the code and you'll be there together with 17,000 people in the industry. We talk about globalization, we talk about localization, and more recently about content and culturalization. That's why this conversation is so important to us here at Multilingual. As we start understanding cultures and as we want to globalize our businesses, then we have to ask ourselves, you know, whether I'm in education, in linguistics, in language services, when you try to take a company to a place, then things can break apart really quickly, and you can really perhaps not do what you are supposed to do throughout your mission. So as we are talking about Haitian Heritage Month, in your lines of work, and I'll give this to any of you, in your lines of work, what are the misconceptions about Haitian Creole? And you just mentioned something, Marlene, that I was a bit confused about. You say, you know, this is the Haitian Creole we speak at home. And I'm like, oh my gosh, are you telling me that then there's one that you speak in your profession at home with your friends, with everyone else? That makes things more complicated. But of course, it shows that type of diversity. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of misconceptions about Haitian Creole. And I write about that on social media. For example, one of them is that First of all, it's not a, you know, there's going to be a debate about this. I'll leave it to the linguist, but Haitian Creole has its own ISO. It has its own grammatical structure. It no longer fits the Creole language category. It's a language. It should be called Haitian. But I'll leave that for another, you know, you invite us and we'll talk about that another time. So there's a lot of misconceptions about Haitian Creole. I'd have a client who asked me if Haitian Creole had grammar. And Haitian Creole has its own. So I wrote a blog about it. And, to talk about how Haitian Creole has its own writing system. It's probably older than Junior and Webster because it was developed in 1979 since we've had this writing system. And we have our own Haitian Creole Academy that regulates, that's the authority on the language, just like any other major languages. So it does have a grammar. It does have a writing system. That's one of the most common misconceptions. Of course, you know, that heritage of colonization, it's always considered as like a watered down version of French. And that's another misconception. Haitian Creole and French are two separate languages. It would be as if you were saying that Portuguese and Spanish are the same languages. They're completely different. They have their own grammatical structure, their own vocabulary, although a majority of our terms derive from the French language, but Haitian Creole has grown up. Like we would say, Haitian Creole is a grand, a grown up as a language that has its own linguistic structure and everything. So that's another misconception. And finally, a third misconception in the transition industry, I would go to conferences and when people ask me what I do, and I had a hard time with that. They'll tell me, what do you do? And I'll say, I'm a Haitian Creole translator. And they're like, who needs that? Like, you know, who needs Haitian Creole translation? And I had to remind them that Haitian Creole is one of the fastest growing languages in the United States. And Florida is the third most spoken language after English and Spanish. So there is a big need for Haitian Creole. It is important. Globally, Haitian Creole is an important language. And if you are running a hospital, you could get fined $100,000 for not being compliant with language policies. And also, if you have a company in logistics and you have employees working with machines and they're not properly trained in their language, you could be fined by OSHA. So Haitian Creole is very important. And like I said, there are, for those heritage learners or for those Haitian Americans who are listening, you could be paid just because you speak the language properly, of course, professionally. So Haitian Creole is very important, and it is one of the fastest growing languages in the United States. It's not like a small language. The people in the language industry know how important Haitian Creole is, but some clients may not know. I don't know if Webster and Junior can think of any other myths. I'm sure there's a lot more. I'll leave some to you guys.
So, like you said, Marlene, many people think that it's a broken French. And one thing I get a lot is they ask me for French Creole. And I get to ask, what is that? It is not French Creole. It's actually, it's Haitian. Like you said, it's not a Creole. It's Haitian. It has everything a full-fledged language needs. Its own grammar, its own academy, its own your vocabulary. And if you say that because it has a lot of French in it, that means it's our language. But French isn't a language either, because French was not always French. French has evolved like any other language, you know? You know? So, yeah, many, many places I go, people don't really know. And sometimes when they need to book a Haitian Creole interpreter, they book French. Luckily, when they get me, I can do either one. So I start introducing myself into both languages. Bonjour, je m'appelle Junior. Bonjour, moi, il est Junior. So the person can choose whichever language they want.
It's a very important question, but I wanted to divide it into two parts about Haiti, but also about the Haitian Creole. But I'm starting with the Haitian Creole. Of course, like Marlene and Junior said, there are a lot of misconceptions, and not into the professional world, but also inside the academia. And while preparing this in conversation, I was thinking about this book the Quill debate. It was the name is like this, like no, the Quill debate is, yeah, the Quill debate. Yeah, it's a book because there's a misconception since the, I think, early 20th century about what we call the Creole exceptionalism. That means the idea that to think that and the Creole languages are like an exceptional type of languages and with a phylogenetics and typological grounds like different than everyone else. And if I want to nail it down, the idea behind it is to say that, like Marlene said, it's the Creole languages, like the Haitian Creole, which is a French-based Creole. Maybe that's the reason, like, sometimes people like are confusing with French and Haitian Creole. And to say that it's a simplified version of the kind of European ancestors, like for Haitian Creole, which is the French. Or the other idea is like they usually see like the Creole languages are like languages that are willing to be, you know, to death, you know, like language death, like via decreolization. You know, this misconception has been like debunked so many times by scholars like Michel de Graaf, like Bruno Gauvin, or like Sally Kokomfwene. And last year, it was like for the, and you know, October is usually the International Creole and Culture Month, and we realized at Indiana University Center for Latin American and Caribbean Studies webinar about the genesis. The title was Genesis of Creole Worlds and Historical Developments with four Creolists or Creole scholars, like in the U.S. and also like one in Canada, actually, and one in Seychelles. It was four Creoles versions, and also like with Professor Sally Kokomfwene as the to give the special remarks. The idea was still today you encounter people asking you about the lexicon of the Haitian Creole. Why it's French? Yeah, it's French because it's a French-based Creole, and of course, like around 70% of the lexicon of Haitian Creole came from France. That's okay, but also it's also a language and related to the grammatical or syntactical code and a structure. We found like West African languages such as like Ivy, Fon, Igbo. For example, like if we take the article the in English, like, or which is the le or la in French, usually it comes before the noun, but also like in Haitian Creole, like it comes after the noun. For example, like if you are saying like in English, the students are here, in Haitian Creole, you will say like "élève yo." You say like the comes after the noun "élève yo là." That means like you say like there's a blended between French and language and also West African and language. That's the reason like when someone is trying to identify the Creole Haitian Creole version like with only the French version. I understand because with the lexicon part, but also about the grammatical structure. It's a different like from French or like a Latin roots and languages. And oh yeah. But also there are like other misconceptions. Like for example, like yesterday I came across social media and there was a question about, did you know Haitian Creole have an alphabet? I said, what? We had an alphabet in 1960 and we had another alphabet in 1970. And the last one was in 1980, which is the actual one. That's not the first time we had an alphabet. And the first two one was kind of created by, and you know, usually like church are really engaged in so what we call the standardization of languages because they have power, resources. And in Haiti, like since the 1860, the country has kind of a sealed, I can say, a pact with Catholic Church, like for education. Like that's the reason you see the footprints of Catholic Church in so many fields in Haiti, like education or like administration, anything else. And that's some of this misconception about language. But also like as a linguist, and I could say that, and also because I'm inside the academia, I'm not trying to kind of criticize these people because sometimes, and they are maybe like listening, some people like repeating again and again this misconception, and they need to maybe learn more information about it. Even if sometimes if we base on their confirmation bias, they know what it is, but they choose to believe what they want to believe because this piece of information relates to their feelings, their beliefs, and it kind of upholds their beliefs. And another misconception I wanted to address about Haiti, that's something very important for me. Even I was raised in, you know, raised inside a Catholic family. Like I almost became a priest. So it's a joke about it. Yeah, so you can see like the style sometimes. But that's a misconception because it's something very important for me because I've been receiving this question a lot lately about kind of the Haitian voodoo, or like the voodoo. Like, for example, like we remember after the earthquake, there was a Christian televangelist named Pat Robinson who said that we made a pact with the devil, like to be freed from French colonizers in 1804. And I was in Maryland in 2023, in the summer of 2023, and a lady came to me and I said, do you believe in the, you know, seal with the devil and theory? I said, of course I don't. But I had a conversation with her to explain to her about like and where this comes from, and also like the fact that for what we call one of the moment, very important moment in the Haitian battle, so that led to the independence, and on August 14, 1791, which called like the Bois Caïman ceremony. It's kind of a Cayman Woods ceremony. And there's a lot of misconception related to this ceremony. And I was reading recently a book about Maroons and to see it as an act of resistance, because it was different like for some other countries like that were freed, because one day the colonizer like just wake up and said, okay, I wanted you to be freed. It was different for Haiti. That's the reason we're so proud of it sometimes, to say that we fought for it. It wasn't a given. We earned our independence. And also like since the 20th century, we have so many movies about voodoo that portray this way Haiti, and also that carried out this misconception about the country to say, well, when you see Haiti, you see like a pact with the devil. And it's so popular in the US because have crossed it many times and over the last few years. And I think that sometimes people need to know better, because this time right now, people can't say that we don't know where to find information. There are available. There are a lot of information available. There's no excuse today about this misconception, whatever it's queer exceptionalism or whatever, about like this pact with the devil. Like there are a lot of information available. If you're willing to go into confirmation bias, because that set of belief kind of strengthen yours about a country, about a people, about a culture, that's okay. But don't take that excuse, that don't take that word to say that I don't know where to go, where to find this information.
Again, it's important to educate the world and also to educate our people. I come from a Protestant background, and most of my pastor, my former theologians, would be very mad at me when I take a stance for voodoo, because it's part of our culture. And as Haitians, we need to embrace who we are, and we need to respect our ancestors. Our creatures need to stop like Bois Caïman and say that they are like battling over the spirits to make them go. They are part of who we are, and we need to accept. We need to embrace. We need to embrace our culture, and we need to stop portraying everything that belongs to us as something negative, like the colonizers want us to make it, to hate ourselves. It's like the freedom fighter said, I can't remember his name, who taught you to hate everything that looks like you, to hate your culture, to hate your skin color, to hate your language, to hate everything. Who taught you that? who taught you to hate your religion, to hate your ancestors. Whereas many of the things that happens in voodoo, they also happen in Judaism. They also, you remember when the queen, during the ceremony of the Queen of England, they brought a goat. Just imagine something like that happened in a black country. The whole world would say, hey, voodoo, right? But they just do the same. But once they are the colonizer, they are the dominant ones, it's okay. But when once we do it, I mean, we learn to not like ourselves, to not accept ourselves. And so that needs to start at home. And our education needs to value everything that belongs to us. We need to be at peace with ourselves in order to elevate our language and our culture.
Junior, and this is really well said. Like Marlin, is letting us know, this is really particularly evident in the actual conversation, mostly for what's happening in the United States. But as we know, for many things, the United States become lead, and then the other nations lag, but end up following suit. And then when you have a nation that through an executive order, which is not a law, establishes one language as their primary languages, disregarding the richness of other languages that are around, then perhaps we encounter one of the first challenges, especially when we're talking about the business of language, because we're talking about the huge part of the iceberg. That's why we're having this panel today, so that people can understand what language richness looks like and what cultural heritage looks like. And then that sometimes some of the things that you localize become the tip of the iceberg of something that's so much bigger. And this is the reason why training models becomes so difficult, which, you know, makes me think about translation and interpretation services from the perspectives that you have. And even if budgets are not changing as much as we were talking off the record, that budgets perhaps are not changing much and that there is still significant access, there are many changes that probably, at least in the psyche of the society, will become policy changes in healthcare, in the legal system, in government sectors. How important do you think this conversation is? Is this going to become an uphill battle now? Was it an uphill battle? Is it worse now? Like all these movements, especially in the U.S., how are those affecting you?
I guess it was already an uphill battle. It's going to be just worse. It's going to be just worse. And it's not just in services. Imagine somebody who is a truck driver right now, who is wondering, what am I going to do because I don't speak English? And you wonder, do I need to speak to the wheel? Do I need to speak English to the tires? Do I need to speak English to the roads? Because I can do my job even if I do not speak English. So I think, unfortunately, these decisions make the country go backward, and many advancements we have made over the years, we might lose some of them. Hopefully, after this administration, things might get back into normal, but we're losing a lot. We're losing a lot right now. This is not a time to stop people from meeting each other. This is not a time to create more barriers. It's a time to build bridges, to bring people together, because languages are riches. They are not to be seen. Languages must be friends. They're not to be seen as the enemy here.
So if I can say something about, I usually like with this conversation, I have two sides. And for example, I recognize there's a lot has been done. For example, like in Indiana where I live, I know there is like in Indiana has the judicial branch has a language access plan, and it was like put into effect in 2019. And also I know the mayor office for international affairs in Indianapolis in Marion County has a language access plan for the county, because I talked to the person in charge. And for example, I can take another example, like where I am, I work as a Haitian queer interventionist, but actually as a reading interventionist. We have many Haitian queer interventionists, like Spanish interventionists inside the Marion counties or Indianapolis public school or schools in general. That means like, and it's a kind of recognition. There is a need. And so diversify the body of of the staff, the body of educators, because we have some specific segment of the population. And in the beginning, they need some English proficiency. So reach the target goals for the in terms of education or like and results, because at the end it's about the states, at the end it's about the education, it's about the country. The other side is I always, even when I was in Haiti for French and Haitian Creole, I always speaking about kind of what I call linguistics or cultural fraternity. And how I explain that is when someone, for example, like we have a lot of people, foreigners coming to Haiti working, specifically after the earthquake, they kind of increase and we feel more comfortable when they come around and they learn our language, like Haitian Creole, which is very good. And we feel comfortable because the conversation, because for example, my mom, who is a Creole monolingual, doesn't speak French or doesn't speak Haitian English. When she found someone, for example, like from the US or like from France, who's willing to speak Haitian Creole, that kind of brought a little smile to her face. That's what I call the linguistic fraternity. That means like I usually encourage people to at least grasp a portion of the language, like of the receptionist, because if you were the receptionist, you would be very happy to see like the other person is willing to learn your language as much as you or yourself, you wanted to do your, to make extra effort to at least grasp the language. That's my linguistic vision. For example, like I have my friends, I have family, or like I usually encourage them to learn English. And because I said that's the country, and also like that also created increased access to so many doors or like so many opportunities. For example, like I can say it by myself and at Indiana University, and even like the three out of four classes are Haitian Creole classes, but also like you teach them in English because, you know, like elementary, like you need to have a basic of English. That's the reason I don't go into this, you know, this position to say that, okay, it's just like the receptionist who needs to grasp to learn your language or your culture. You need to adapt a little bit because you are inside this environment. And for example, like I also, we have a lot of Haitian kids at school. Sometimes they don't really eat U.S. foods or U.S. cuisine. And I used to reach out to some family to say, I know, like, this is not your food. I know you wanted them to eat Haitian foods, but also remember that at school, they don't serve Haitian foods. You need to train the kids at least to try a McDonald's once a month, because that's what we serve at school. You know, it could be McDonald's or something else, because what we serve at school, it's not Diri Sospa. Remember that. Does that mean like the kids, we have some kids who spend the whole day without eating anything. Would you want your kids to spend the whole day without eating anything or just try and make that a once? That's what I was thinking about. But also like with the current situation, my last take, and with the last order about like the English becoming the language, the official language, I am also interested to see how states gonna put it into effect, implement it. For example, because we did have some states that have like English as a official language, like in many states before this order, like we have, but also like some of them like are still trying. So recognize the diversity, the richness of the body of the language they have inherited or like over the last decades. And I am willing to see, because you know, sometimes I am from Haiti. I know sometimes an order doesn't mean effects in the country. That means even though we know like in terms of reception or like, you know, perception, that's gonna change a lot. That's gonna increase fear or anything else. But also sometimes I need to see how the state's gonna implement these changes to see if they're willing to take to cut budget, like from an organization that are doing the work to kind of train people like in multilingual. And I wanted to see that. And maybe after that, I can say, okay, that. And it's not only about the federal level, but also on the state level, they're willing to make
the change so that it become a monolingual country.
And Marlene, and if you allow me, I have a question that I think Marlene Jr. probably are really well equipped to do it, and of course Webster as well. But because I know the time just got really short when you're having fun,
yeah,
and it just disappears, and we could continue talking for a couple more hours. I think we should have a whole day, probably happening all around. But I'm really happy we've done it, and I hope next year we can come back to see where innovations are happening, what's going on with Haitian Creole. But policy in the United States is not the only advancement. In the past 2 years, we've seen how artificial intelligence has basically just come in to every single industry. And it's very positive on some areas, very negative on some other areas. And when we're talking about marginalized languages, it's very easy to oversimplify what artificial intelligence probably can do with it. And when we're looking into scalability and automation, including artificial intelligence, machine translation, we have to think about what is the responsibility of integrating this for languages like Haitian Creole. And perhaps with Haitian Creole, there are many lessons to learn there on how to responsibly approach these technologies. So if you can tell us from the business side, of course, you want to be as efficient as possible. You want to include technologies. You don't want to be wasting resources, but you also want to be responsible and culturally aware. What can you tell us about that?
Like Marlene was saying, we need to ensure we use a human-to-loop workflow. That's essential. Now, one thing that can be weird, even if we're talking about AI, we're talking about technology, it goes back to the same pattern we've been seeing over the years, like Haitian Creole and Haitians and Africans and everything Black is left to the side. It doesn't have the same recognition that they should have.
And I would say all non-Europeans, maybe that would be better, because there's also indigenous languages,
I agree. So unfortunately, technologies are built by humans and they come with the same biases. So in order for AI to be built in a way that will serve the best interest of the people, it needs to be human-led, and all the needs, the foundations must take into account Haitian expertise and Haitian lead, because oftentimes we're gonna be seeing the same mistakes happening over and over from what we have been doing to what we see in AI. For example, today, a Haitian who is Black, who goes on Facebook and uses an AI tool to see what they will look like in the future, they might end up look like a European. Right? Because even the AI does not recognize our features, because the AI is built with so many biases. So, you see what I mean? So we need to start. I don't remember which one of you mentioned representation. I believe it's Webster earlier. And everything that we're building, including AI tools, representation matters. Haitian experts, Haitians who've been there, who know the needs of the community, where the culture is really taken into account. All of that is very important to build AI tools that are relevant to our reality.
And if Marlene, are you okay right now?
I don't know if you guys can hear me, or I don't know what happened. I agree with you. Yeah. So yeah, I don't have much to add to what he said, except that, in our business, when you're talking about business, working with what we already have, because there's a lot of companies in the linguistic world, the translation world, there's a lot of companies that are creating their own language models, and they use their memories from before. So it's that were done by humans, but it's still, but Haitian Creole still doesn't have enough data sets. So it's still not perfect. But I think, like, I don't know if you guys heard me earlier, like what I said was, I always make sure that there's a human in the loop and that the clients know that this is being done by, of course, there's an AI or MT draft. And then there's the Haitian native working on it. But with Haitian Creole, it's not as advanced as other languages, but it still works. But one of the things that I'm very passionate about is using Haitian, using AI for education in Haiti. We talked about that last time, Edit. I think that if we, because in Haiti, one of the biggest problems we have is this, like, I think one of the participants mentioned about the, we don't have enough materials in Haitian Creole in different fields like STEM. So we could use AI to create the draft, because in schools, so many, the educational materials are outdated, or they're in French. So we could use AI to create these educational materials in Haitian Creole. And of course, make sure that they respect our culture, the local context, but that would speed up the process. We didn't have a chance to talk about the fact that education is still in French in Haiti, although the Constitution says that Haitians, there's one language that unites all Haitians, Article 5 of the Haitian Constitution, Haitian Creole. And there has been amended by the Ministry of Education to have education in Haitian Creole. And one of the reasons that they haven't been able to implement that is lack of resources, because it's like starting from scratch. You're going to have to create textbooks in Haitian Creole. So I think that AI could, we could really leverage artificial intelligence in that context. But there's a lot of work to be done. And we're working with a company called African Languages Lab. And they're very advanced working with languages in Africa and low resource languages. Hopefully we'll be able to develop something that would be adaptable for a language like Haitian Creole.
Part of the problem is the overall consideration, overall treatment Haitian Creole has both Haiti and internationally. So that's part of the problem. So from the identity aspect to governance, right, to policies, it all encompasses the whole approach to the Haitian Creole. So I guess we need to better all of that in terms of advocacy for the language, in terms, yes, of education, raising awareness with the people, and doing our job as parents to make sure that our kids in the US, for instance, they speak the language, they be connected. Sure.
But I have to say, over the past 10 years, I'm the optimistic one in the room. I have to say that over the past 10, 20 years, we have come such a long way. There's a lot of work to be done, but we have come a long way with the Haitian Creole Academy, and even in the US, the Haitian Creole is in the digital space. It's, you know, it's compatible with so many different platforms. So that's, for a Creole language, that's a big deal. I don't think there's a lot of, out of those hundreds of Creole languages, Haitian Creole is one of the most advanced Creole languages, which is why it's leaving that category. So kudos to everyone and all the wonderful work they have done. And there's that big elephant in the room, the pink elephant, is that the right expression? Haiti is going through unprecedented political crisis right now. Even if we wanted to do something, I don't think that's the priority of the government. The priority of the government right now is security, with those gangs destroying the lives of so many people. And you talked about governance and policy. The reasons that we haven't been able to implement, because the rules are there, the constitutions, there's been mandates by the Ministry of Education, but all Haitian institutions are weak right now. So it will be impossible to implement any of those things if we don't even have a government. So I think that to be able to implement these policies, we need to have a strong, at least a not even strong, you know, we'll take what we can get, but we need to have we need to have a stable government so that people can start working instead of, you know, going crisis after crisis after crisis.
Mm-hmm. I have so much to say, and a few things. And I was reading maybe like earlier yesterday an article published after the 2010 earthquake, and there was a professor, I think his name is William Lewis, talking about how after the earthquake they were trying to integrate into machine translation the Haitian Creole, because after the earthquake they wanted to have, there's a very good article available. They wanted to have, you know, restaurants and on a how to act, because, and it was, he mentioned a set of problems about like standardization, and also it was difficult. And also he mentioned about like the register in the Haitian Creole language, although sometimes we know as Haitian, as native speaker, when we are speaking in a formal tone and when not in an informal, but sometimes it does not recognize for some categories like low resource or under resource language. Like that's the reason sometimes the content localization is a little bit difficult. And I wanted to kind of value the actions of Google, I think around 2017, when they team up with MIT Haiti. And MIT Haiti, so kind of like Marlon said, like Haitian Creole is like the most advanced right now, and into the Creole varieties. And because we have this, the highest speakers, the highest percentage of speakers, and also like we, the highest advocates, and that for so many reasons. And if you go into like for Google team up with a Haitian team at MIT, which is MIT Haiti. It's a very good initiative after the earthquake, leads by Professor Michel de Graaf, and they team up for what we see, the automation or Creole translation on Google. And also we can see like for Duolingo, and they also team up with a group of Haitian linguists. For example, I know Naya, I know Cecil Axidien, I know Nicola, who is at FIU. And that means that I think this, and I think this system also like recognize, our agency recognize the importance of having a Haitian voice in the room to avoid the repeated mistakes like we used to have after the earthquake or before. That means that, which is a very great deal for me. And the last thing I want to say is in translation, because I usually do translation from French, Haitian Creole, so English and English, so both of them. And I, Spanish is for Marlon and Junior. I am not a proficient in Spanish. And yeah, what I can say, it's about my problem, my struggle, it's nuances, what I could say, nuances, and using idioms, using colloquialism, or like using cultural references, because those are very important. Because sometimes, and it's difficult, like, and when you are, we have sometimes an expression or idioms in Haitian Creole that is informal, or like that is formal, and maybe like the equivalent in English is informal. And that's the reason sometimes they are usually encouraged to have when it's needed, to have a second look, a formal native, because sometimes we can create inconsistency without knowing that or without wanting to do that. And also, and these nuances for me, because I am also an English learner. That makes it a little bit difficult for me. So when I say difficult, not to do the translation, but also to pay attention. So the specificities of the language, because we know, like Junior mentioned, sometimes there's a lot of inconsistency in the translation. For example, even at school, like at the elementary school, like we know sometimes educators, when I am out and educators, you know, are willing to use Google translation or like Canvas or translate or piece of text. And it came with great
inconsistency. And also one of the things that I realized from reading the article from Lewis is, for example, like if we in Haitian Creole, sometimes there's the tendency to write merci without the accent on top of A. It's very large. For example, we say merci M E plus the accent, and sometimes without the accent. And William said sometimes it's difficult for the machine translation to recognize which one to prioritize, because we have two varieties here, and both of them. And when you can say that when you're doing a research, and if you, for example, if you add a comma at the end of the third word, and without the comma, it could be a different translation. You can see that. And also I said that's something very important. And another thing he pointed out is the fact that sometimes we, for example, if we said with us in Haitian Creole, avec nous, a lot of us said aven, aven, like one word, aven, two word, avec nous. And sometimes you said that they're willing to create a false dictionary with some and with other words that are not like that recognized, like this is the formal register, like the frozen register. This is the casual register. But I don't know. I haven't heard read another article from him to know where they are actually with this false dictionary. But I think that could be a good help with the machine translation, having a false dictionary to point it out. And okay, this is the register that's gonna help a little bit with the translation, machine translation, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's important for the Haitians watching right now. That's why it's so important to use the correct writing system. If you don't know it, learn it. The Haitian Creole Academy published 2 resolutions on the writing system. They're available on their website, academycreole.org. You can learn them. You can follow us, like our social. This is one thing we advocate every day. We have micro lessons on social media to make sure that you learn the correct writing system, because it's so important. Because like in the search engine and machine translation and AI, they get confused because we have so many different variations to the writing system.
That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Of course, I want to take a second to say a thank you to everyone who has listened to this conversation, everyone who's seen it live, and of course, everyone who will look at our snippets and potentially also the summary that we'll put out there on the web. If you have any more questions as you're seeing this recording, leave it there or leave us a message. We will probably also be releasing this recording very soon. Marlene, everyone else, Webster Jr., thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Merci en pile, Eddie.
Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you. Merci. Now what?
Yes, multilingual. I wanted to give a little props to multilingual because I spent a lot of time on their website over the last 2 days. It's rich. I encourage people to visit it. There's a lot of great content. I learned a lot about automation, about localization. I learned a lot. It's a very wonderful work. And I wanted to value a little bit the team's work. And thank you for this. The magazine is...
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm a subscriber. Yes, the magazine. I like so.
We're also full of jokes. Look at
me. Yeah. Oh, nice.
Geek English Dread again. With our jokes. We have our jokes. But thank you, everyone. I will stay in touch. We'll see you next year. Talk more about Haitian Heritage Month. Have a good rest of your day.
Happy Haitian Heritage Month. Bye.